It's time for Wisconsin Life. 75 years ago, millions of radio listeners were shocked to hear alerts announcing the arrival of Martians. Writer Dean Robbins tells us the story behind one of history's greatest stunts.
For me, Halloween is associated with the War of the Worlds radio broadcast, which caused a national panic on October 30th, 1938.
The Columbia Broadcasting System and its affiliated stations present The War of the Worlds by H.G. Wells.
My family had the show on a Golden Age of Radio record album, and it spooked me as a kid. It's the story of a Martian invasion staged as if it were happening in real time, and a million listeners took the bait. A lot of them packed up their belongings and fled their homes. Others flocked to police stations, seeking refuge. Some people actually ran around with cloth pressed to their mouths so they wouldn't inhale the Martians' poison smoke. Who thought up this splendid stunt?
Ladies and gentlemen, the director of the Mercury Theater and star of these broadcasts, Orson Welles.
Orson Welles was a Wisconsin native, born in Kenosha and schooled in Madison. At 23, he'd already conquered New York theater. To this day, I love hearing the Wisconsin whiz kid make magic on War of the Worlds. His stroke of genius was to fabricate news bulletins, which interrupted what sounded like regularly scheduled programming.
Ladies and gentlemen, we interrupt our program music to bring you a special bulletin. Reports observing several explosions on the planet Mars.
Things turned grim during a bulletin from Grover's Mill, New Jersey.
Ladies and gentlemen, my aunt. Ladies and gentlemen, here I am, back of a stone wall that adjoins Mr. Wilmer's garden.
A reporter offers a chilling account of a Martian emerging from its spaceship.
Wait a minute. Something wriggling out of the shadow like a gray snake. Eyes are black, with saliva dripping from its rimless lips.
Welles conducted his 10 actors and 27-piece orchestra from a podium in CBS's Manhattan studio.
Wait a minute, something's happening. A humped shape is rising out of the pit. I can make out a small beam of light against a mirror. There's a jet of flame springing from the mirror and it leaps right at the advancing men. It strikes them head on. Lord, they're turning into flames.
During the reporter's frantic account, he signaled for silence and held it for 6 blood-curdling seconds.
Coming this way now, about 20 yards to my right.
Ladies and gentlemen, due to circumstances beyond our control, we are unable to continue the broadcast from Grover's Mill.
Listeners got the idea that everybody had died from a Martian heat ray. Americans felt duped the next day when they realized the Earth had survived the hour-long broadcast by CBS's Mercury Theater on the air. The government launched an investigation, and Congress threatened to censor radio broadcasts. The Wisconsin State Journal's front-page headline was typical of newspapers around the world. Hysteria sweeps country as radio hoax describes invasion by Mars giants. Many people missed the second half of the broadcast, having fled their homes in terror. But those who stuck it out got to hear a final word from Welles himself.
The War of the Worlds has no further significance than as the holiday offering it was intended to be. The Mercury Theater's own radio version of dressing up in a sheet and jumping out of a bush and saying boo.
It's the gentlest ending imaginable to a Martian invasion.
That was Dean Robbins. He's editor of Madison's alternative weekly newspaper, Isthmus. Wisconsin Life is produced by Erica Janik. This episode is produced in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. For more information, visit wisconsinlife.org.
We'll continue the conversation now about War of the Worlds with Timothy Troy, professor and chair of the Department of Theater Arts at Lawrence University. Timothy, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, I'm very happy to be here. What a great topic.
So what do we know about the backstory here? It's quite a prank to pull on people, isn't it?
It is, you know, and it's fun. I think one of the things we might think about in 2013 as we listen back to the show is to think about being the first audience. And it's hard for us to do that because we know what happened because of it. But when you listen again and you put yourself in the position of, you know, washing dishes or driving in your car and just happen to have the radio on, you really understand how people could have been sucked into it.
This is an adaptation of the H.G. Wells novel, War of the Worlds. What did they do to make this novel fit for radio?
Well, I think you had one of the really great radio producers of the era in Orson Welles. And he found a way to make it sound so current. And what I mean by that is when we think about in the radio drama, there are reporters who are at the scene, you know, kind of the way we would think of, you know, the live camera or the satellite feed, you know, in contemporary terms. And that was a fairly new phenomenon. The Hindenburg disaster, which people are familiar with, that had a live report, was only 15 months prior to this broadcast. So I think a lot of what he did is he made it very current, not just sort of updating it generally, but, you know, detail by detail in the storytelling, but most importantly in the medium that he used, the medium of radio itself as the storytelling device.
Hearing how completely panicked and freaked out some people seem to have been, jumping in their cars, going to the police stations, and then at the end, Orson Welles says, oh, it's the equivalent of putting on a ghost mask and saying boo. And he didn't sound at all sorry to me. Did he sound sorry to you?
Well, I think, you know, it was right at the end of the broadcast, and, you know, when you think again, think back into the moment it was broadcast, you know, he didn't know all that stuff was happening. You know, that story's told afterwards. And I think it's just good for us to remind ourselves, you know, that that these people weren't silly or anything like that. You know, they were hearing really effective storytelling.
Where does this broadcast stack up in Orson Welles' career alongside, you know, all of his movies, his acting career?
Well, I think Welles, you know, he just was such a genius in so many ways. And, you know, as a film director, you know, he's considered one of the greats. His acting career had been well established by this point. But I want to turn it back at sort of, as you mentioned, to his ability to manipulate the medium of radio. And he really came of age at the exact same time that radio was coming of age. He was a star in a very popular series called The Shadow. And in The Shadow, it's a guy who has some sort of Eastern wisdom, but, you know, he solves crimes by just showing up as an invisible presence. And as listeners, we know that Lamont Cranston has become the Shadow because of the way they manipulate the microphone and the way they manipulate the voice itself. So it piques our imagination. And I think Welles understood how radio is broadcast, you know, sort of widely, but that each listener is individual. There's a way in which the radio is whispering in our ear, and it's a one-on-one conversation. And I think that's, in some ways, where he fits. And in fact, if you listen to The War of the Worlds, which I hope everyone will, when he plays the character of an astronomer who's, you know, kind of out on location, and he's, you know, calling in some new information, and the voice effect that Orson Welles uses as Professor Pearson is exactly the same voice effect that Orson Welles uses as the Shadow. So if in 1938 you were a regular radio listener, you would have kind of recognized that sound, his voice with that kind of effect.
Do you think that with War of the Worlds, this broadcast, he discovered sort of the leading edge of where you can go using art to sort of simulate real life and making it seem like the whole thing's real? Or does that look kind of tame by today's standards?
Well, I think there are ways we could do that now. Of course, you know, you had fewer broadcast media at the time, but I think it really is in that first wave of a generalized broadcast, you know, that people over a whole continent could be listening to the same thing at the same time, which is different than cinema, and that's different than theater. It's different than reading a book. And I think those pioneers were really feeling that power.
Do you think that since then, whether we're talking the formats of radio, TV, movies, a lot of directors and producers are looking back at the War of the Worlds broadcast and thinking, how can I create that kind of response that he did?
Well, I think we all, you know, with our arts, you know, I'm a theater artist, so I bring people into controlled circumstances, you know, a dim room and spark their imaginations that way. But I think the ability to do what he did, just in whether or not we think about the trick or that people kind of got really scared, the fact that he, let me put it this way, he was very modernist, right? He used the medium to tell the story itself. He didn't ignore his own medium. He, you know, it was a radio story told via the radio, right? It was an auditory story, and people were calling in, and broadcasts got interrupted and all that sort of thing. So, you know, it's up to the next genius to figure out what we have that does a similar thing, and I suspect it would need to include digital media in some way, don't you?
Definitely. Timothy, thank you so much for being with us today.
It's my great pleasure. Thanks for bringing this to our attention.
Timothy Troy is professor and chair of the Theater Arts Department at Lawrence University. Two things. He's going to join Norman Gilliland this Sunday on University of the Air for a full hour look at the War of the Worlds. And we've got a link to the full broadcast of the War of the Worlds on our Facebook page. That's Central Time on WPR.